We've been studying about Christ in the Gospel of Mark, and today we want to talk about the popular Christ. So many times we focus on Christ's crucifixion and his enemies that were trying to destroy him that we forget about his popularity. You know, every once in a while, there is a great personality, a magnetic personality, that bursts onto the surface of history and explodes and causes a stir. And this person is powerful and charismatic and dynamic, and they just captivate other people around them. We've seen a lot of these people over the years. We've had some of them as presidents here in the United States. I think Bill Clinton was one of those people who he could lie right to your face and you still wanted to believe him because he just had a magnetic personality. A lot of people looked at John F. Kennedy and they thought, wow, you know, this guy, he is just so impressive. For others, it was Ronald Reagan. For others, they look to other world leaders. Benjamin Netanyahu or someone else that just really captivates their people and leads their people. Gandhi was one of those kind of people. And throughout history, there have been people like Julius Caesar and Alexander the Great, Confucius or Shakespeare or Winston Churchill. And there was something compelling about these men. There was something about their force of will or their power of mind that just washed over other people, and those people were just astounded by them. But perhaps nowhere in history do we find anyone quite like Jesus. The first chapter of Mark introduces us to the greatest personality of all time. 2,000 years ago, and yet still today, it's hard for us to grasp just what kind of a man he was. He astonished everyone that came in contact with him. Some loved him, some hated him, but everyone was amazed by him. Mark wants to impress us with Jesus in his first chapter. He wants us to see Jesus as a man unlike anyone else. He wants to let us see something of the aura that surrounded Jesus. He commences the story about Jesus with something for the reader that's very important. He knows those who are reading, whether it was those first readers or those who pick it up hundreds or even thousands of years later, would have never met Jesus in the flesh. For the most part, very few of those even reading his gospel in the first century had actually met Jesus. And for us, certainly, we haven't. And so what does he give us? A description of Jesus that allows us to see him the way those who walked with him and talked with him saw him. Not just a cardboard cutout character. Not just a flat personality, but someone with power. The power of the personality of Jesus is revealed by Mark. Of course, the best that he can do to really reveal that is not only tell us the things that Jesus said and did, but also how the people around him responded to those things that he said and did. How did they feel? He shows us their awe. He shows us their reactions. He tells us about their wonder and their amazement to help us recognize the kind of amazement and wonder that we should have in the presence of Jesus. People who'd leave everything to follow him. Crowds flocking to be with him. Time and again, he points out to us that this was no ordinary man. There was something unique. There was something different. And that's what Mark does in this first chapter of his gospel account. He shows us three things about Jesus as he tells us of just one day in the ministry of Jesus and how it affected the people who were there. And I want to share that with us from Mark's own words. Beginning in verse 14, we see John was arrested. Jesus came into Galilee proclaiming the gospel of God and saying, "The time is fulfilled, the kingdom of God is at hand, repent and believe in the gospel." And passing alongside the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and Andrew, the brother of Simon, casting a net into the sea because they were fishermen. And Jesus said to them, "Follow me and I will make you become fishers of men." And immediately they left their nets and followed him. We talked about in class this morning, and I want as we read through this passage, the immediately passages in Mark. Jesus does things with a sense of urgency. The king's business requires haste. It's not something to be lethargic about. Immediately they left their nets and followed him. And going on a little further, he saw James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, and they were mending their nets in the boat. And immediately he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired servants, and they followed him. And they went into Capernaum, and immediately on the Sabbath he entered the synagogue and was teaching. And they were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one who had authority and not as the scribes. And immediately there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." But Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Be silent and come out of him." And the unclean spirit convulsed him and cried out with a loud voice and came out of him. And they were all amazed, so that they questioned among themselves, saying, "What is this? A new teaching with authority. He commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him." And at once his fame spread everywhere throughout all the surrounding region of Galilee. And immediately he left the synagogue and entered into the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Now Simon's mother-in-law lay ill with a fever, and immediately they told him about her. And he came and took her by the hand and lifted her up, and the fever left her, and she began to serve them. That evening at sundown, they brought to him all who were sick or oppressed by demons. And the whole city was gathered together at the door. And he healed many who were sick with various diseases and cast out many demons. And he would not permit the demons to speak because they knew him. And rising very early in the morning, while it was still dark, he departed and went out to a desolate place. And there he prayed. And Simon and those who were with him searched for him. And they found him, and they said to him, "Everyone is looking for you." And he said to them, "Let's go to the next towns, that I may preach there also, for that's why I came out." And he went throughout all Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and casting out demons. And a leper came to him, imploring him, and kneeling, said to him, "If you will, you can make me clean." Moved with pity, he stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, "I will be clean." Imagine touching a leper. And immediately the leprosy left him and he was made clean. And Jesus sternly charged him and sent him away at once and said to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded for a proof to them." But he went out and began to talk freely about it and to spread the news, so that Jesus could no longer openly enter a town, but was out in the desolate places, and people were coming to him from every quarter. Jesus is active and busy, isn't he? He's not too busy, though, to be sure that he does the things that God wants him doing, that his Father wants him to do. As we consider the popularity of Jesus, it's a little different than what we sometimes consider about Jesus. So many times we do talk about him being a man of sorrows. We talk about him being rejected by men. We think about Isaiah 53 a lot. But Mark stresses the rising popularity of Jesus in Galilee. And the thing about his popularity is, of course, it did rise and fall, and he was turned against eventually and crucified. But his popularity remains to this day. It's interesting, there are several who, I think the first was probably the Beatles. John Lennon even said, well, Christianity's going to go away, and we're bigger than Jesus. We're more famous than Jesus. And maybe they were for a few years more popular than Jesus. But Jesus' popularity didn't wane. I saw news stories about that and how, oh, they were more important than Jesus. They were bigger than Jesus. They were more popular than Jesus. And then I saw a chart from recent years. They weren't popular anymore. They weren't as well known as they once were. In fact, a lot of this younger generation may not even know who they were. But Jesus remains popular. Now, he's not perhaps the most popular person this year. Maybe he wasn't the most popular person last year with people. But over the centuries and over the years, he continues to draw those who are willing to come into his presence and be amazed. As we consider what Mark stresses here about his popularity, we see him gaining disciples in verses 16 through 20. Four men think enough of Jesus to immediately leave what they're doing and go after him, leaving their work behind, leaving their father behind, and to go to work with him. People in Capernaum are amazed. Mark shows us Jesus as a teacher that stuns people. They're amazed by the words that he uses, amazed by the way that he presents the material that he's presenting. He teaches with authority, and he puts their regular teachers to shame. And yet he also shows that he's more than just a teacher. Oh, the other scribes and teachers could talk about miracles, but Jesus could perform them. He has the power to cast a demon out of a man in verses 23 and following. And that stuns the people even more. They're more amazed than ever. And of course, the news spreads quickly. Something's going on here in Capernaum, something that hasn't happened before. All of Galilee is talking about Jesus. And the whole town brings out all of the sick, and they come to meet him. They come to see him. Jesus shows his power over sickness by healing Peter's mother-in-law. And only the disciples witness this event. Only these first four disciples. But word continues to spread throughout the town. And the whole town brings the sick and the demon-possessed together to be healed by him. In verse 37, the disciples come to him and they say, "Everybody's looking for you." All that everybody would be looking for him still today. Of course, so many are not. But I'm afraid that sometimes the reason that a lot of people are not looking for Jesus is because many of his followers have shown them a poor reflection of Jesus, to the point that people think, if that's what Jesus is like, I don't want to know him. Even Gandhi said, "I like your Jesus, but I do not like your Christians." We need to be doing everything we can to show a reflection of Jesus in our lives that's accurate. One that shows him in a good light. One that lets people see who he really is and want to be with him and want to be like him. Everyone was looking for Jesus. And Jesus escaped the crowds to continue preaching. A lot of people want to think that Christianity is about social justice. It's about helping the poor and feeding the hungry and healing the sick and building people houses and these. And those are good things to do. And Christians should do those things. But that's not what it's about. If we built a house for everyone that doesn't have one, and if we fed every hungry person, and if we gave clothing to everyone who needed it, if we didn't teach them about Jesus, if we didn't tell them the gospel, the good news about the kingdom coming, we would have failed in our mission. Jesus knew that aside from healing people and casting out demons, what he had really come to do was preach the gospel, bring the gospel to people. If we healed all of humanity's physical ailments, took care of all of their physical problems, but left their souls plagued by sin, we failed to reach the potential that Jesus wants for us and that he wanted for himself. Jesus continues to preach. The people are clamoring for Jesus. The same response occurs wherever he goes. It finally gets to the point he can't go into a town. He's mobbed by the people. After healing the leper, finally, he's driven to have to stay out in the desolate places, the lonely places. But that doesn't discourage the crowds. They'll still come to him. I want us to consider this popular Christ versus the man of sorrows that's constantly in our peripheral vision as well. All throughout Jesus' ministry, constantly in the distance, he knows it's leading to the cross. And there's a sorrow there because of that. But we tend to focus on that rejection theme. And for good reason, we focus on that. He gave us the Lord's Supper to remember his death, not his popularity. And so there's a good reason for us to focus on those things. And Isaiah's description drives our understanding a lot of times. He was rejected by men. Men hid their faces from him. There was nothing beautiful or comely about him that we should desire him. He was bruised and he was stricken and beaten, and by his stripes we're healed. And that drives our view of who Jesus is. But we need to balance that with who Jesus was early on in his ministry, when he was the popular superstar that everyone wanted to be around before the rejection came. Mark and the other gospel writers certainly stress the cross, and ultimately that is the most significant event, because it's by the blood he shed there that we have the forgiveness. That is the gospel, Paul tells us, his death and his burial and his resurrection. But Mark also tells us about a time in the ministry of Jesus when he was accepted, and that was the rule of the day rather than the rejection that would happen later on. Mark wants us to know that Jesus affected people powerfully, and that they flocked to him, and that we can help them flock to him again today. But we need to show them the powerful Jesus. We need to show them the Jesus who taught like no other, who performed miracles like no other, who knew things that no other knew. Let's consider the power of Jesus. Jesus was not a weakling. The Bible talks about him being meek and lowly of heart. And sometimes people see meekness as weakness. But Mark stresses the power and authority of Jesus. He's shown us how Jesus affected people, and he weaves in this first chapter the reason Jesus had this effect. It wasn't that he looked better than everybody else. He wasn't the most handsome guy. It wasn't because Jesus was taller than everybody else or stood straighter than everybody else. It wasn't even necessarily because he had a booming, commanding voice. Instead, what we see is that he told people what they needed and wanted to hear. And by wanted to hear, I don't mean that he told them the things that made them feel good about themselves. They wanted to hear about God. They wanted to know about God. And he gave them that information. And he could tell them things that the scribes and the Pharisees and the other religious leaders couldn't tell them because they didn't know. They were guessing. I feel that way a lot. People ask me questions and I say, well, okay, I think this is it, but I don't know for sure everything about a particular Bible passage that somebody might ask me about. But Jesus, well, there was never any doubt. There was never any question. There was never any, well, I'm not sure exactly what that means or exactly how to apply that. He always knew because he was there when it was written. He knew exactly what it meant. He knew exactly how it should be interpreted. There was an aura to this man that others immediately recognized. When they were in his presence, they knew they were in the presence of something great, someone great. Twice the word exousia is used by Mark in this context. It's a word that can mean authority. The NIV translates it that way. It can mean power. Others translate it as power. The King James, I believe, translates it that way. And others translate it in similar ways. Authority or power. Mark's point, though, is that Jesus exuded this exousia. This power bled from him and covered all those around him, that they could see and feel that there was something different when they were in his presence. Everyone recognized it. Some of them hated him for it. The Pharisees and the Sadducees, time and again, they're, you know, if everybody's going to follow this guy, he's going to take everybody. We're going to lose the whole nation. We're going to lose our power because he's more powerful than we are. The demons recognized him. He had a powerful message. He preached about powerful issues. He told people what they needed to do and how they needed to live. And he didn't draw back. He didn't shy away. And he wasn't afraid of controversy. And he wasn't afraid that he would say something that would cause people to leave him. And in fact, at times, he did. He said some things that caused people to turn away from him. But he said it anyway because it needed to be said. But there was an urgency to his message. The time has come, he says. It's urgent. You need to do something about this right now. Don't wait. Don't keep putting it off. There's good news. Repent and believe the good news. People sensed right away that his teaching was different. They called it a new teaching, or at least questioned, is this a new teaching? There's something new here. I haven't heard anything like this before. He had a strange power over people. The ability to just say, hey, follow me. And people followed him. I mean, if you think that's a common thing, go try that today. Go somewhere this afternoon, just point to a couple, hey, come follow me. And see how many of them do it. If you find some people that'll follow you, bring them back here for church tonight. But you're not. People just don't do that. And yet when Jesus walked by and said, hey, you, follow me. They just dropped what they were doing and off they went. His power. His authority. What kind of person must Jesus have been? Now I know the artists of the Renaissance painted him with the little halo over his head. And I know he didn't, you know, it wasn't like that. It wasn't like people could just look at Jesus from across the way and say, wow, that guy, he's glowing. No, it wasn't like that. But there was still something about his presence and his confidence and his certainty that caused people to react either violently against him or devotedly for him. There weren't a whole lot of people who were on the fence after. I mean, you know, at first they might not, who is this guy? But once they met him and had an interaction with him, they were changed. People reacted differently to the powers of Jesus. Some people were captivated by his personality. Others were amazed by his teaching. Most were, of course, flabbergasted by his teachings and exorcisms and his healings. And they just stunned by the things that he was doing, things that no one else had done. But of course, there are always those who don't want to be impressed by those things. And there were with him as well. Well, let's consider the priorities of Jesus. Mark gives us this insight into the mission of Jesus. He hints at Christ's priorities by the order of these events. The first thing he comes and does is preach the good news of the kingdom in verses 14 and 15. Then he makes some disciples to tell them they're going to be fishers of men, verses 16 through 20. Then he's confronted. I mean, you think, you ever heard somebody say, I heard somebody told me this just this week. So, well, I come to church, but I'm afraid the roof might fall in on me, or there better not be a cloud in the sky, or I might get struck with lightning if I go to church. Well, we see Jesus going to church, to the synagogue of his day. And guess who he meets in church? Guess who confronts him while he's teaching? Guess who jumps up and has something to say? A demon. Now, I tell you, if a demon could get into church, then I think just about anybody else could too. Now, of course, that demon got in, but he had to leave a different way than he came. He came in a person that he had possessed. And Jesus told him to get out of there. He didn't get to stay, but the man did that he had possessed. But look at this guy. I mean, he confronts the forces of evil. He's attacked by... this demon, who are you? What are you doing here? What do you want with it? And he gets rid of it. He overcomes that. And then he comforts the sick and afflicted. But Jesus makes it evident what his real priorities are. When we come down to verses 35 through 39, we see again that his real priority wasn't just to establish a hospital and heal all the people in the world that were sick, or even, cast out all the demons. His goal was to preach and teach the gospel. He could have become a full-time healer. He could have gotten rich healing people. He could have charged for his services and he would have had more shillings than everybody else in the whole country. But that wasn't why he was here. In fact, he never charged for any of his healings. Jesus came to preach the good news of the kingdom. And in the company of his disciples, he goes throughout Galilee, preaching, confronting evil, and preaching some more. But of course, a conflict of interests arises. The miracles began to get in the way of the message. The popularity interferes with the preaching. And so he has to get out of the way so that only those who are serious about hearing the message will make the trek out into the wilderness to hear him. That's one of the problems with popularity. Hadn't watched any football games yet this season. I don't know what teams are doing well and what teams aren't. But I have seen a pattern in years past that when there's a team that starts to do well, a whole bunch of people who aren't really fans jump on the bandwagon, don't they? They want to be fans of the team that's winning. And so they leave whatever team they may have been fans of before that started losing, and they jump on that bandwagon. And the true fans sometimes kind of get pushed to the side. The true fans get kind of irritated by that. because they went through the hard times. Jesus goes out in the wilderness so that only the true fans are going to come to Him. That's the danger. Do we want Jesus to be better known and more popular than He is right now with people? Well, yes, we do. We want everybody to know about Him. However, the danger is for the church that it just becomes about popularity and not really about following Jesus. We need to watch out. We need to be sure that we're following Jesus for the right reasons. That we're not allowing it to just be something we do out of popularity's sake, for the sake of being part of a certain crowd. Well, what lessons can we take away from this chapter? There are some things we need to consider. We must recapture, at least in our own minds, a sense of the living, breathing Lord who amazes us by His presence and affects us as no other personality we know. We've got to allow Jesus to be popular with us, even if He's not popular with the rest of the world. We've got to allow Him to cause us to do some strange things because we want to be with Him. There are some things that we're going to have to leave. There are some things that we're going to have to do that others might consider a little odd and a little unusual. But we need to know Him. You think about some of the things people did. They left their boats to follow. They stood in a crowded line at the door. They hounded Him early in the morning and chased Him out into the desert. Some even dug holes in roofs to get to Him. Remember, Zacchaeus, little fella, climbed up a tree. I remember James Ard gave a devotional about Zacchaeus, and he talked about this distinguished-looking little fellow. He used Sarah as an example. Someone who's dressed fine and got it all together and climbing up a tree like a little kid. That would be a strange sight to see, wouldn't it? But Zacchaeus, that's what he did, to see Jesus, to be with Jesus. We've got to be willing to let other people think we're a little odd in order to be closer to Jesus and to be more like He wants us to be. We must decide, how are we going to react to Him? We have that choice. Are we going to do it like the disciples and be affected by the power of His personality and follow the whole Jesus and learn from Him and be like Him? Are we going to be like those worshipers at the synagogue who are just amazed by His teaching and just be content to, wow, I could just sit and listen to Him all day but not do anything about it? Are we going to be like the crowds who just want to see the miracles, just want to have themselves or their friend or family member healed, but don't really care about the teaching? It's our decision. How will we react to Jesus? If we're going to react to Him properly, we must accept the priorities of Jesus as our own. Teaching others the good news of Jesus Christ and the kingdom. Discipling others, being fishers of men. Confronting evil and comforting those who are suffering. And then having the courage to keep living those priorities and keeping them straight, regardless whether it brings us more popularity or less, more friends or more enemies, we still have to let the priorities of Jesus rule our lives. If you're here this morning and you haven't let Jesus be the ruler of your life, if you haven't allowed His personality and your awe for who He is drive you in a different direction than you were headed before you knew Him. Then you have to ask yourself the question, do I really know Him at all? Maybe you need to get to know Him better. Maybe you need to quit just being a listener and start being a doer. Maybe you need to quit just being a fan and get in the game. If you're here and you have a need to respond to Jesus' invitation for any reason, please do so as we stand and sing.